Good morning. Welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Chivett and your co-host today, Michael Cigani. Michael, good morning to you.
Morning, Hugh.
We're back with the Umbrella Movement today. Remember them? And the report on events of August to December last year, just released by the administration. The so-called public sentiment report, which was promised in that debate with students, has been passed to the Hong Kong and Macau Affairs Office as an objective account of events. But it's already faced criticism for various omissions, misrepresentations, and for not actually reflecting, according to some, the views of critics. Just ahead of the second stage of consultation on reform expected to be launched today, what effect do you think the report will have and what do we learn from it about the administration's priorities? Email us with your thoughts. Our address, backchat@rthk.hk, or go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. Or you can call us 233 88266. Later in the programme, we'll be talking about security concerns about the new smart identity cards. Joining us in our central studio is David Webb, founder of Website.com, a shareholder activist. Dr. Kwok Kar Kee is a legislator with the Civic Party. Legislator with the Liberal Party, James Tin, joins us on the line, along with Professor Ho Lok Sang, convener of Silent Majority for Hong Kong, professor of economics and director of the Centre for Public Policy Studies at Lin Nan University. James Tin, maybe we'll start with you. Good morning. Thanks for joining us today. What do you make of the report?
Well, the report originally started because the Pan Democrat legislators like Kwok Kar Kee and the rest, together with the students, wanted the Beijing authorities to know more what happened after MPC's Standing Committee's decision on August 31st, and then all the way up to the recent event, which is basically the clearing up of the Occupy Central. So government decided if that's the case that they want, and they are suspicious that the Beijing government doesn't know what's exactly happening in Hong Kong, they go and do the report. So they will just basically compile all the data. So overall, I thought that's it's a fair report in a sense. They just stated all the facts, of course, in their favor, and then just gave it to Beijing without their opinion or without adding very sentimental descriptions of the whole thing. So in factually, I just thought that was a decent report. Now, I was asked by a lot of reporters, why did my sort of dismissal from the CPPCC wasn't in the report? So I thought, oh, that's an interesting fact. Maybe it's not worth mentioning. But the reason I brought that up about CY's resignation is something I thought they should have brought up in the report, which is the governance of Hong Kong is in trouble right now. CY simply cannot govern Hong Kong. That's why we have the Occupy Central for over 2 months. The police aren't taking action. They couldn't control the students. All the roads are blocked up. And then in the Legislative Council, Kwok Kar Kee and the rest started the uncooperative movement, filibustering all the meetings. Now, that is a big reason why this Occupy Central happened. It's not purely on the point of universal suffrage. The point about the governance of Hong Kong, or rather the inability of CY Leung's government to govern Hong Kong right now, is simply not in the report. So on that part, I thought it was a bit funny they didn't mention that.
But then
the
what do you want?
Quite genuine.
What do you want to say? James Tien is Michael Cigani here. Well, what should the? It's called a public sentiment report, but there's no sentiment there. So shouldn't it just be called a factual report? Or should the government have taken a position
Michael,
or an opinion?
I didn't notice that in English they use public sentiment report. But in Chinese, it's actually ma qing bo go. I don't see why the word sentiment actually be brought up. Because if you had sentiment, then the blue can
there's no sentiment there.
Pose sentiment to us. And the yellow can would say that you should have more sentiment towards us. So I thought the report should simply state the facts. They did say that there were protesters and the police taking action. But certainly they would not admit that the police were beating up the students or who started the beating first, the student or the police.
But then by giving a factual report to the central government, how does that help anybody or anything?
Okay, Michael, that's a good question. And my personal view is this report basically is just to satisfy the needs of the Pan-Democrat legislators and the students. Don't you think that Beijing knows what's happening in Hong Kong? My feeling is that Beijing, through the central liaison office, with all the people there sort of networking in Hong Kong or hiring in Hong Kong, knows more about our government, what happened during those two periods. Why would they need a report? They probably could write a report in more detailed terms the now government with all the analysis of, for example, whether there are foreign sort of powers involved or not. They touch it. CY Island said there is, but there's nothing on the report. But I'm sure the central government, through the intelligence, will actually have more facts and figures, whether it's foreign interference or involvement or not. So I think this report is totally for Hong Kong. I don't think the Hong Kong Macau office really have to read it. They know all the facts and figures. Now, also, did you see that the Hong Kong Macau office came up with a response just like 1 hour after the report? There was supposed to be 1,000 pages of sort of that appendix.
Well, the office had the report beforehand.
Pages of the report. They knew it right
away.
They probably knew it ahead. But I think most of the response they make is firstly very general, and secondly, I think they actually really know about this whole Occupy Central. Who's who behind it? I think they know who's who behind it, together with all the pictures taken of all the students, the protesters. Look at it. They are even not allowing Emily Lau to go to Macau with reasons untold. So I think a lot of things that they know really doesn't need our sort of public sentiment report to report to Beijing.
Isn't it, though, a kind of implicit recognition of the events, at least, because this is a report which has been formally submitted from one, well, from the SAR government to the central.
That's true. It will be a very sort of formal report, but I think it's really for Hong Kong's public consumption. They will probably put it in their file, but you really think all the MPC Standing Committee members, the 300-some of them, will actually read it? I doubt that.
Ho Lok Sang, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Hi, thanks for joining us. Does this report make any difference to anybody, do you think?
No, I don't think it's going to make any difference. In the final analysis, I think it's really very difficult for any political reform proposal to get passed through LegCo. It's really very difficult. But in light of the fact that there's demand for such a thing, you know, and the government just complied, I think that's all that is to it.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I also heard that there was a discussion regarding facts versus sentiment. I think it's a fair report in the sense that it lays out all the facts, and the facts actually reflect the sentiments. You know, because without those sentiments behind it, you know, those things wouldn't have happened. So it's not, you cannot really describe sentiments in any tangible way except through facts that express those sentiments. Right?
So you're saying that the facts speak for themselves, but you represent the silent majority for Hong Kong. The Democrats are saying that this is not really a report because it didn't express the real opinion of Hong Kong people, and that the vast majority want to have democracy.
Yeah,
silent majority, so
yeah,
which
yeah,
which is...
Yes, I'm trying to say that to try to quantify sentiment in one way or the other, you know, what percentage support, you know, that is not the essence of the report, certainly, you know, and any suggestion that there is a view that expresses the view of all Hong Kong people, that is not accurate, definitely. You know, everybody knows that there's diverse opinions about it, you know, and to say that the Hong Kong people support this or support that, that is not...
Well, if it supported the Democrats, you would complain. If it supported you, then they would complain, right?
But the report does.
Right, exactly.
The report does say that the people of Hong Kong support and wish to see democracy introduced according to the decisions of the MPC.
Yeah, exactly. Towards the end, that's exactly what it says.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's in the conclusion. That's in the conclusion.
But how can the conclusion be accurate?
That doesn't make sense. That's not true.
That conclusion certainly is not entirely describing the whole picture, you know. And I do think that the vast majority of people are in favor of abiding to the law, but are they all in favor of the political reform framework as proposed in the August 31st, NPCSC put it that certainly is debatable.
Okay, David Webb, good morning to you, and thanks for joining us. Your thoughts on the report?
It wasn't really a report on sentiment. It was more chronology. It was what the first chapter is about important events, and the other chapter is about events.
Then there are two annexes. One which has a lot of the views.
Right, but they make no attempt whatsoever to analyse sentiment by aggregating those polls. There's no statistical effort in there at all. It's purely a chronology. It's what we all expected, I think, which is a document mainly for public consumption to tick the box and say we did say we'd do a report, so we've done one, and it'll go into the it'll be filed in the bin in the liaison office because they already know what happened in Hong Kong. There are some missing events, I think, that were in the context worth mentioning. There's the disclosure of £4 million of hidden payments from an Australian company to CY Leung right in the middle of the crisis. There's his remarks that if you had poor people on the nominating committee, we'd end up with those sorts of policies, as he put it. There was an executive councillor, Laura Charles, remarks comparing Hong Kong people to slaves in America and how they had to wait for the vote. And she got her history wrong on that point. It didn't take as long as she said. And as you mentioned, they didn't mention James Tien's resignation or removal from the CPPCC. But then that's probably because the CPPCC isn't really important anyway. It's just for show.
Or foreign forces.
They didn't mention foreign forces. We've been waiting for about 10 weeks now for CY to produce at the appropriate time his evidence of that the whole thing was basically a foreign plot and that the students were perfectly normal people who would have been perfectly happy with the NPC decision were it not for the foreigners. That didn't get demonstrated, or there's no evidence elucidated on that point. And then finally, they do try to say it's the common aspiration of everybody to work within the NPC framework, which it clearly isn't. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been protests in the first place. So
the last part, as you say, David, it's a chronology of what happened. And the last part, obviously, was an opinion, which I don't think should have been included in it if it was a chronology. But then the other things that you mentioned about CY Leung and so on and all that, should that be counted as part of
depends how narrow you want to.
The Occupy movement, whether James Tien's firing was
exactly.
part
I mean,
of
you,
that movement.
I can accept the point that you may want to
whether
be.
Was the donations by Jimmy Lai to some legislators, I don't know whether that was included. If everything else should be included, shouldn't that be included as well?
I think that was before the uprising began. But anyway, the you're right that they didn't have to include everything, and they say it's not exhaustive. And they did try to stick to the very narrow point-by-point events surrounding the protests about the decision. I do notice that they've adopted the new basic law language of people, Hong Kong people administering Hong Kong rather than ruling Hong Kong, which I noticed a few weeks ago they'd amended the basic law fact sheets to change that from Hong Kong people ruling Hong Kong. That's really the point here, that this is the Hong Kong administrator sending a report to the ruler rather than the Hong Kong chief executive.
An email from Andy, backchat@rthk.hk is our address. Andy says, the report matters because the Hong Kong government was forced by the students to write it. The government has reacted like a truculent schoolchild forced to do some homework that he doesn't want to do. Mm. The government has littered the document with comments giving its real feelings, but which it thinks are worded in such a way as not to incur trouble from the teacher. The government gives the game away in paragraph 401 when it states that it is the common aspiration of the Hong Kong people to implement universal suffrage in 2017 strictly in accordance with the basic law and relevant interpretations and decisions of the NPCSC. This is manifestly not the case. If it were, Occupy Central would not have happened. The report has been written in the most unhelpful manner, listing bald facts without comment or elaboration. There is constant reference to opinion polls without giving the finding of those polls. The report refers to the government website for those polls, but there is no information in English there. And Andy points out, as you said, that the phrase Hong Kong people administering Hong Kong is
Used. And the cover, it says report on the recent community and political situation in Hong Kong. They avoid saying report on the actual situation in Hong Kong, which is the wording used in the basic law, because that would imply that the actual situation might have changed, necessitating a review of the NPC's decision. So they steer clear of that phraseology.
Kwok Kar-Ki, what do you make of this? Because no one really asked for this, did they? I mean, it was offered by the government as a kind of concession, but no, the students and the Pan Dems never said, yeah, that's just what we wanted all along.
No, I think we, although we're saying that we observe that the central government may be able to understand, or perhaps they will already know what's happening in Hong Kong, it's still the opportunity and it's still the responsibility of the SAR government to reflect truly the sentiment in Hong Kong to the central government. Now, if we took that is the mission, and we will find why do we need a report. Of course, I do not like to concur with the view that the report is only to, you know, to please the students, because right after the release of the papers of the standing committees of the NPC, the whole sentiment of the whole territory, a lot of people of Hong Kong is very against the so-called the new proposal on the constitutional reform. They cannot agree or they cannot accept that is real universal suffrage. So the report is an opportunity for the government to address the sentiment and perhaps take this opportunity to let the central government to understand what is really the people of Hong Kong think. And by that, we hope the so-called the second round of consultation will put on some real discussion. Of course, it will be very difficult for us to accept, you know, the resolution made on the 31st of August. But there should be a way that the government should go about that. It should be the way the government should to address the sentiment of people of Hong Kong and ask for the central government to restart the five steps, so that, you know, at the end of the day, we will have the universal suffrage. But it doesn't happen like that. It doesn't, you know, really doing its homework. For any government, if they really want to have a kind of, like David said, it's a chronology or it's a kind of factual account, it should be truly reflect what's happening in Hong Kong. If they have been to the place like Admiralty, they should have seen millions of people. There has been an estimation by the popular polls of the Hong Kong U saying that around 20%, it's 19-point-something% of the people has actually went and perhaps to join the Occupy campaign. So that means more than a million people of Hong Kong is so angry about the resolution made, so that they just came out and then they say no. And of course, they had a lot of others, you know, requests like the stepping down of Si Wai Leng. But of course, this all has been missed by the report. So the report is a total failure of the government. They just, you know, they're wasting the money of the people of Hong Kong to, you know, filing up this so-called chronology. They're wasting the energy of these people. They should have just go to this Wise News and just, you know, take whatever they want. But this is exactly, you know, is an example why the people of Hong Kong are disappointing. We have been, you know, always saying that our government is up to the, you know, international standard or quality. But, you know, what has been done so far by this so-called sentiment report is a failure. And some very stupid ways, you know, they're saying that, like the disclaimer. You know, I never find in government's paper saying we'll have such a stupid disclaimer saying that they have no responsibility legally. They're not going to verify anything. You know, they're just doing cut and paste. This is, you know, entirely irresponsible.
Yeah. They do mention the call for the resignation of the CE on three different pages, though. I just Googled.
There's no insight, no analysis. And if we, you know, really think, you know, stupid enough to think that people in Beijing will look in the report, I don't think it helps. It's a report misleading the people of Hong Kong, misleading the government, even misleading those in the government itself. It is entirely irresponsible. We can't call it a sentiment report. So yeah, that's why what our response yesterday, we just simply put it in the bin.
I just want to ask a very quick question, because James Tina pointed out that in English it's called a sentiment report, but in Chinese it is not. Dr. Kwok, the Chinese name for people who don't speak Cantonese, what does that mean?
Perhaps I should like to say the change of report in the English also is a report on the recent community and political situation in Hong Kong. They change it.
It doesn't
even
say
the
sentiment.
Title is didn't say anything on the sentiment. So they're not cheating, but they changed the title already.
James Tin, what about the argument that the Hong Kong and Macau Affairs Office, as you said, know perfectly well what went on in Hong Kong? And more than that, they knew perfectly well what was going to happen. You've had comments by executive councillors who've said, this is what they expected, or this was, acceptable, within the acceptable range. This was anticipated, this kind of civil disobedience, and Beijing will put up with it.
Well, certainly I think that it's not Hong Kong Macau office knowing all this, but definitely the central liaison office today, who really, because of the, in my view, is simply CY is not governing Hong Kong as well as he should, then central government through the central liaison office is now, maybe I used the word, paying attention to all sort of activities in Hong Kong, including all sort of activities in the Legislative Council. When do we have what meeting? What meeting is going on? So what happened to this high degree of autonomy in a sense of Hong Kong governance by our chief executive? So I feel in future, who wants to really be the chief executive of Hong Kong when the high degree of autonomy, maybe I shouldn't use the word being eroded, it's definitely not as high as in the days of C.H. Tong. Nowadays, probably the CY was actually telling CLO what's happening. CLO will know so much that will actually tell CY, you should do this, you should do that, or not do this, or not do that. So I think in Occupy Central situation, especially what's happening in Admiralty or Mong Kok or Causeway Bay, I really think the central liaison office, so therefore the Beijing government, knows more than our Hong Kong government.
Maybe what's happening
in the Legislative Council, the Hong Kong government knows more than the central liaison office.
Do you think this is a personal problem with CY Leung? Do you still say that CY Leung should resign?
Well, I always thought so, because if we look at the things that we can see, how would the point about that, hey, violating a law is something that Hong Kong people will tolerate. But in the early part of this sort of the Occupy Central period, people's actually sympathetic to these people violating the law. And then he's standing there without any ability to do anything, either the police or the government. I thought that my feeling had always been that in a place like Hong Kong, where the government have no votes in the Legislative Council, the chief executive, as the number one in Hong Kong, should reach out and have a dialogue with all the legislators, and he should have a dialogue with the students. I tried once. I went to visit the students during the Occupy Central movement, and they said they just want to have a dialogue with the chief executive, and on occasion that I had with him, I did brought that up to the chief executive and say, hey, these guys all wanted this a dialogue. You can have a dialogue, but you don't have to listen to them. Just talk to them. Well, you can simply tell them factually, hey, this is not my decision. The point about universal suffrage on or the views of the MPC's decision on August 31st. But having a dialogue, at least you could talk about something, or at least in other things, that you could sort of let the students or the pandemic legislators have something, but they're not willing. So I think that if the chief executive doesn't have a human touch, which is basically willing to talk to people, try to allow some of different views being absorbed into his policies, or at least try to make a show of being sincere, it would help. But
James
Dean, such a person in character.
You say that even there was a dialogue, CEO Leung could have said that they may not listen. So in your opinion, this difficult, very tight framework on August 31st, was that a result of CY Leung governing Hong Kong ineffectively? Was that a result of CY Leung not reflecting Hong Kong's true opinion to the central government?
I don't think
the central government took the decision itself without wanting to know about Hong Kong sentiment?
Yes, Andrew, that's a good point. But I think on this one, although I'm not very happy with CY as the chief executive, I would not put the blame on him. I think the decision by the MPC Standing Committee on August 31st, if you put it on a very high level, you have to talk about a lot of issues, of which we don't have time on this program. Because for example, you look at Beijing. China have a lot of problems to deal with. And China also noticed that America have a lot of problems to deal with. They have Russia to deal with. Russia has to deal with Ukraine, with Europe. And look at the economic situation in Europe, the oil prices falling, the ruble falling. So I think the mainland Beijing authority sees that they could do a lot of things that, that they decide to do. I don't think it's because of the Hong Kong sentiment or what CY had reported to them. So they put up a very tight direct election chief executive in 2017 proposal, saying that Hong Kong people, you better take it, because at least it allows these 3.4 million people to have a vote first. That analysis I buy, but I don't think it's simply because of what CY did. Now, whether CY did the bad job or not, whether Beijing sees that or not, I hope they do, because if you look at the problem we're having now, anyone who's good at governing a country or a city or a place would know CY is simply not governing Hong Kong the way we should be governed.
Okay, well, James Tin, I think we have to say goodbye to you for the moment, and to Professor Ho Lok Sam. We'll continue our discussion after the news at 9. We're also going to be talking about the new smart identity cards, focusing at the moment on that report called the Public Sentiment Report originally, but that doesn't seem to be the title anymore. Anyway, that's what we're talking about, the weather forecast. Before the news now, it's going to be cloudy today with rather low visibility. A couple of rain patches around at first, temperatures lingering around 18 degrees. It will become cool gradually. Temperatures dropping to about 15 degrees tonight. The outlook mainly fine, with rather cool mornings in the next couple of days. 18 degrees now, humidity at 94%. We're talking about the public sentiment report, or the public report on recent community and political events, especially the so-called umbrella movement that's just been published, just ahead of the announcement today of the launch of the second stage of consultation, which is something we can also talk about perhaps in the next 25 minutes with in our central studio legislator Kwok Kar Kee from the Civic Party, and David Webb, who's the founder of website.com. Our email address is backchat@rthk.hk. And a little trail. I think we've confirmed now that Rimsky-Yuen, Justice Secretary, will be with us on Friday morning to talk about the second stage of consultation. So sharpen your pencils or your wits or whatever comes to hand for a special, and it should be an interesting back chat, as I say, on Friday. A couple of thoughts, first of all, on the report. Henry, in an email, backchat@rthk.hk, thank you, Henry, says, I think the report is of no significance, but a fulfilment by the government to submit such after the talk with the students. The Hong Kong Macau Affairs Bureau does not need such a report to respond, as they are on top of the issue from the Hong Kong government, the media, the internet, and from the liaison office here in Hong Kong. Besides, previously Xi Jinping got a daily report on Hong Kong during the heyday of the crisis, and the numerous centres in mainland universities studying Hong Kong would provide updates and analysis to the Bureau. Recent analysis articles in pro-Beijing newspapers show that the mainland is already discussing in depth on developments post-Occupy movement, i.e. looking to the future. We should not dwell too much on this report, which is concerned with the past. Says Henry. David Webb, I wonder if this report does have the effect slightly of casting the Occupy movement as history, that this is something which is sort of done, yes, and dusted. That is one kind of
they wanted
side
to,
effect of
the
it.
The chronology of this week says that. They wanted to get this report out and say, yes, we've done that. We haven't dishonoured our promise to the students to produce this meaningless report. And now we're going to talk about phase two, which, as you said, Rimsky-Yuen's coming on your show to talk about, which is being announced today, I think. Yeah. And that's going to have all these inane options in it, possibly including the none of the above option. And talk about things like the how you get nominated to be nominated, the pre-nomination of with whether it's 1/8 of the committee in order to have even a chance of being nominated. So those things are going to come out next. But you know, I think one of if,
but
if
does it was, does it close off the first phase? Does it
no?
Does it have the effect, even sort of psychologically, of saying, well, that was then, that that's history?
This no, is I don't think it chronicle. Does to the common to the common sensible man in the street or on the tram. The issue is still there, which is that as long as you have a 50% approval requirement, you're having a pre-election, and it's an Iranian-style democracy where the Ayatollahs pick the candidates and then the people get to choose between the acceptable candidates.
Well, actually, Carrie Lam did say she's not naive enough to think that the issue is over. She did
yeah,
say that.
Yeah, so you know, why try to bulldoze ahead with stage two when you've already been told that 27 legislators are going to vote it down? Vote down stage
well,
one.
Well, I agree with Leonka Alan Leung, or I think Kokaki, I think you know somebody from Democracy Camp said, put the report out now, forget the consultation, we'll veto it, and then we'll just move on. I think that's what should be done. I agree with that.
Yeah.
You think so, Kokaki?
No.
just forget about the consultation. Put it to a vote now and get it over with.
The signs of the government is giving up. It's quite clear to us. The sentiment report is actually not doing the job to help to, you know, resolve the conflicts. It's not helping the people to gain their hearts. It's not helping to win the vote, whatever. And one of the another signs that they stopped doing the so-called the public consultation with the report released today. So they stopped doing the souls. Even, you know, there has been always a game played by CY Leung. They're doing a lot of talk shows in the communities, outreach, and they're asking their people to come and join and clap their hands. But they stopped doing so. So the signs that they're giving up the hope that...
You wrote on that, Michael, didn't you?
What I said was that they canceled because the government officials said that they canceled because they didn't want to cause more trouble. Because every time he goes out, there's trouble. There's
of course they will.
People throwing eggs.
But you were saying they shouldn't be bullied.
I don't think so. I think he should go out there and face them. Whatever happens, even if eggs are thrown at him as they were at financial executive John Jung, he should go out there and stand up and face the people instead
just
of being
wear a helmet
bullied
or bring an umbrella
and goggles.
But
why submit to certain people who deny him his right to say and to speak? I mean, he should go out there and speak.
I don't
speak.
Think that's what you said, Michael. No,
I said
no. You didn't say that.
What did I say?
No,
I said
you said.
I
you
said
you mustn't let thugs
yeah,
shut down
exactly.
town hall meetings. What are we fighting for? Democracy
or anarchy?
Or anarchy?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Those who deny others their say are not champions of democracy. They are frauds.
Exactly.
The emphasis seems to be on the frauds and the thugs and the anarchists.
Absolutely. If you know, I'm glad you brought it up. Because if
you don't
I
seem to be criticizing CY Leung,
no,
you seem
if
to be criticizing
if,
those who would criticize CY
if
Leung.
If I fight for democracy, I would have others the same right to speak as I would. That's the central theme of democracy. I may disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it.
Exactly. So, but how can we expect some, you know, chaps like CY Leung has been missing for 2 months?
Still has a right to speak. He still has the right to speak.
I think all the people will allow him to speak. You know,
they don't.
Frankly,
when John Chung went out there, they threw eggs at him.
It doesn't help stopping John Chung to speak. John Chung has all the right to speak. They hate.
That's
have
exactly
the
what I
power.
Said.
They have the RTHK. They have all the means. If they're going to have a press conference, they have direct broadcast.
And
you know,
that's
CY
exactly what I said.
Means.
Go out there, even if people throw things at you,
of
go
course.
Out there and speak.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's part of the rough and tumble of political life, and we do have the rule of law, and the people who throw eggs, they get prosecuted.
They get prosecuted, exactly, so go out there and speak.
And of course, the young people would not be afraid. They will do whatever, they will face the legal action. Yeah.
Kwokaki, like Hugh pointed out, do you want those people who do that, deny others their right to speak, to be counted as part of a democracy movement?
The central theme of which is
to allow others to speak.
No,
they
actually they sold their discontent to the government, but it won't stop them to speaking out. The government and any officials, top officials in Hong Kong, they have all the right to speak. Look, you know, whenever CY Leung or Zhang Chen like to speak in front of the camera, all the camera was there waiting for them. They will have direct broadcasts. They will have all their speech and ideas being brought out. And the next day, in all the major media in Hong Kong, nobody can stop them from speaking out. Even if they go to the community hall, a lot of them, they will have their, all the rights to speak out. Of course, the sentiment of the people, if they are against C.Y. Leung, they would have to do it. But, you know, we have now a lot of security people in Hong Kong. Neither the police, they have maybe five times more than the protesters in numbers to protect the C.Y. Leung. So why should they be afraid of? It's only like countries which is authoritarian will be afraid of the people. But of course, in Hong Kong, it won't be like that. I think I would not endorse any people doing violent acts. But, you know, throwing an axe is not entirely and very violent act to a lot of the Western society.
Aren't people at the, yeah, as you say, aren't people at the, don't government officials go to the town hall meetings to listen? Not to speak. They have plenty of opportunities to speak. That's the whole point, is that they're listening to the public.
Now, if they want to listen to people, they will have a lot of chances. In fact, they can go to the MOT right at the very beginning of the Occupy movement. I don't think they will do anything to harm him or any other officials. If you have witnessed, you know, what has been happening to Carrie Lam, she is so safe, you know, in the rooms to talk with the student. The student will not throw anything on her. In Hong Kong, a lot of people is very rational, and they are peaceful. Of course, there will be a handful of people which is not, observing the ideas of nonviolence, but majority, I would stress, most majority of the people of Hong Kong still want a peaceful talk with even with the C.Y. Leung and Carrie Lam, perhaps. I do not think there will be any harm to them if they really have the courage to come out to speak to the people of Hong Kong in the street.
I think the biggest omission from the report was his remarks to the international press about the election committee and how, if it fairly represented proportionally the people of Hong Kong, then we'd end up with socialist policies. And yet, what you see just a week or two ago is proposals which pander to the agriculture and fisheries sector, which has 5% of the committee, to basically give them land, large chunks of land for farming, at the same time as they're trying to find land for housing. And saying, well, market forces have broken down because there isn't enough demand for farming in Hong Kong, and land isn't being used for that purpose, so we must make it used that way. And there you see, that when you have these rotten boroughs in the functional constituencies, you pander to those, rather than working for the general interest and public interest of Hong Kong. So, I think, you know, there should be a lot of debate about what he said. On that, I don't think that the outcome of a democratic process would be any worse than what he's currently doing by flinging land at farmers.
Okay, a couple more emails. One from Peter. I'll address once again backchat@rthk.hk, or there is our Facebook page as well. Peter says the possible value of the report would have been to supplement and correct for the record the earlier report made by the government after the first round of consultations. But it seems that the government is not able to be objective and honest. The inclusion of the formulaic and obviously incorrect statement in the conclusions that it's the common aspiration of Hong Kong people to implement the reforms in accordance with, among other things, the relevant decisions and interpretations of the MPCSC only confirms the lack of credibility of the government on this issue, says Peter.
That's well, interesting. That's orchestrated.
I had forgotten
it?
About yeah. the other report, actually.
Yes, well, you see, the first report was...
That was kind of the intention, wasn't it, to kind of correct...
I think that these reports are all approved by Beijing before they're ever released. Okay,
I agree with that, too.
And so the first report had to be approved.
If
and
it's
had
not
to say,
by them. Yeah.
It was basically bland. It said, on the one hand, this, on the other hand, that. Some people say this, and some people say that. On balance, I think there's a need to change the system. Please advise. There was absolutely no recommendations in there. This was not someone representing the people of Hong Kong saying there's a clear majority who favour true universal suffrage, please advise. There was no direction or given from Hong Kong towards Beijing. It was all the other way around. It left it as a completely open feast for Beijing then to hand down, as it did, a very draconian decision. And so I think that whole thing's just a charade. That was the way it was always going to play out. Beijing said, please produce a paper which says this, and then we can produce a paper which says that.
What the people of Hong Kong is reading from this sequence of events is that the government is actively giving up the rights of the independence administration in Hong Kong, and they're giving up their rights or the courage to speak out what is happening in Hong Kong. That is a tragic, is a tragedy in Hong Kong, because if we observed changes over the years about the chief executive and the government in dealing with issues like constitutional reform. Earlier, the chief executive and the SAR government is able to speak out what's exactly what the people of Hong Kong is wanting. And they, even if you're quoting the example in 2010, there's still some talks and negotiation between the central government and also the SAR government and, of course, those in Hong Kong. But now it's come to the scene, is they turn their eyesight, you know, close, and they turn blind to what is happening in Hong Kong.
I was just thinking of the context of the debate and the time when this original commitment was made to produce this report. Wasn't the point that was made again and again in that so-called debate by the students was that it wasn't Beijing's fault, it was the Hong Kong government's fault, and it was the fault of the report which they'd submitted to Beijing. And that was a tactic, surely, by the students to give room for Beijing to change its mind.
Exactly.
Because they could alter their decision, because they could say...
We were badly advised.
Okay. Yes. That was a tactic.
So that's why we...
That was attempted by the... and it was a deliberate tactic attempted by the students at that time. In fact, it hasn't worked because they were trying to drive a wedge between the government, between the Hong Kong government and the central government, and they are standing completely united.
So that
didn't work.
It didn't work. So it comes to the point that, you know, people realizing that those in Hong Kong is just puppet. So see why it's a puppet.
The mainland government doesn't understand that the way to social harmony here is to give us a true choice, and then we'll all be happy with the people we've elected for 5 years, because if we're unhappy, we can change them after that. They would rather just hang on to this control state mentality that they have up there, where they control large chunks of their own economy and crack down on free speech and censor the internet and so on. And that's the psychology that is being injected into the Hong Kong system, even if it results in a few months of protests. And in fact, I think Zhang Zhejiang said right after that decision, there's going to be some protests in Hong Kong. I mean, they knew it was coming. Mm. They said that's a price worth paying, because in the end, we win. We get to keep control of everything. And that, in our minds, is more important because of our sort of chip on the shoulder about the unequal treaties and so on of 150 years ago. That's more important than actually having a harmonious outcome in Hong Kong.
So, Kok Kong Kee, now that, you know, the Democrats are going to vote this thing down, what is the next game plan for the Pan Democrats? They've got enough votes to vote the thing down, and Alan Leong said they're definitely going to vote it down. In fact, he wants to have the vote right away instead of having a consultation. After it is voted down, what's the next game plan for the Democrats?
Of course, we are not wanting to vote down any proposal.
I know, but you're going to vote it down. So,
but for this, you know, we can't endorse it. We will be unable for us to accept this is a universal suffrage.
Right. So what's the, after that's voted down, we go back to an election?
The boss is not on our side. And I don't know whether it's a trick it's a tragedy made by the central government. They just want to delay the discussion.
I'm trying to understand, after it's been voted down, there's going to be an election in 2017 under the old system if it's voted down.
Of course,
then,
you understand that.
Then for the next, from now, 2015 to 2000 and
indefinitely.
Indefinitely. What is the game plan and strategy of the Democrats?
There has been a strategy for us. You know, we understand our situation. We are not in upper hands. The hearts of us is of the people of Hong Kong. So we would stay on and to requesting a fight for the democracy, although it's very difficult. But to accept something like the proposal made by the NPC, which is entirely not a universal suffrage, is equally difficult for us for any people in Hong Kong. We can't accept something which is not genuine. If it's a fake one, we will say it is a fake one. We can't accept it.
I think the other thing to look for this week in what they're about to publish is whether they say anything about the 2016 functional constituency elections, because we're running out of time to get anything done there. And if we don't abolish corporate voting, if we don't broaden those constituencies into something that would be that would elect people who are willing to abolish those seats in 2020, then we lose another 4 years on that timetable.
Apparently,
as well.
Corporate voting is not going to go, from all the media reports I've read.
Yeah, well, if there's absolutely no gradual and orderly progress again on the functional constituencies, which reflect themselves into the nominating committee in 2017, it's even worse than we thought.
You're a financial guy. What happens then, as Kokaki says, they're going to vote it down. They don't know. Mm. They don't have a clear strategy as to how they will play their role as an opposition in the years ahead. And as Hugh said, it may go on indefinitely. You know, as a financial guy, will Hong Kong otherwise function? Because a lot of people have said that it's going to become ungovernable, but will it function otherwise?
We'll carry on with the political gridlock that we've got. We're the only major financial centre in the world that doesn't elect its own mayor. They have Boris Johnson in London, and they have the mayor of New York, or the governor of the New York State. We don't do that, and so the government will carry on with its political paralysis. It can only do things that are very popular, that the pandems can't possibly stand in the way of, handouts and various other things. It'll keep on with these vote-buying schemes like the 72 hectares of land for the farmers and so on, and the reserves will gradually get frittered away in spendthrift infrastructure projects that we don't really need. And, you know, that's all to buy off the various interests in the functional constituencies.
So life will get better or worse.
We'll still have a financial market. We'll still be very slow to innovate on that. We'll have a monopoly stock exchange, which is endorsed by the state rather than competition in that space. And we'll have a monopoly gambling outfit, which is basically a tax collector for the government.
You mean the stock market?
both of them. Sorry, two. If it's not a monopoly, a duopoly of gambling at the Jockey Club and the Stock Exchange, but we won't.
Will we have riots on the streets?
Yeah. We will
because
have
a lot of the
demonstrations.
To be frank, a lot of the students and the young people say that what they've learnt is that peaceful civil disobedience doesn't work.
Right. So the old day of asking for a permit and marching from A to B won't work
anymore. That's going to be gone.
Not if you have a large enough protest, because then people just say, OK, now we're at B, now what? Let's just go to C.
Albert Chen...
And they're not going to be peaceful.
Yeah. Albert Chen...
Well, I think they were peaceful, by and large.
No, they were peaceful, but they've learnt that doesn't work. No one listens to you.
And you know what, Hugh? I was saying Albert Chen from University of Hong Kong did say... I think it was on my TV show where he said that that's going to happen, as Hugh pointed out. There may be riots, and then there'll be a reaction from the government, which will then become more authoritarian.
I think the demonstrations will continue to be peaceful. They might be a bit more strategic about where they go, because this was an accidental spillover into Harcourt Road. I mean, next time that they're planning to occupy somewhere, they'll think about key junctions in Central, for example, or possibly just occupying Upper Albert Road, which would inconvenience almost nobody except the chief executive. So that would make a bigger statement, probably, to be outside Government House than to
be. But as she was pointing out, you don't think that's going to deteriorate into something worse, because they've said that it had occupied peacefully, it hasn't worked.
Yeah, I don't see that there's a violent mob in there. There may be a few people planted to stir up trouble, but generally speaking, people want a peaceful outcome to all of this, and we're far from the stage where we're going to be throwing rocks through windows and turning over police cars and setting them on fire and igniting buses and so on. This is not Soweto. This is Hong Kong.
This is not. Yeah, I can't see that happening. I cannot see it.
Some more emails. One more from Andy, who says the timetable. Who's read it very closely. Obviously, the report. Thanks, Andy. He says the timetable of events contains some fascinating detail, which is never reported in English language media. For example, on the 14th of September, page 42, Elsie Leung said that Hong Kong people should accept that Hong Kong is a, quote, directly controlled municipality under the PRC. This will obviously become the new phrase, replacing special administrative region, directly controlled municipality. Mm. Thanks, Andy. Alan says, dear Backchat, I've tried to give input on numerous government projects and have become disgusted with the word consultation. In every single case, the government had an outcome pre-selected. Any submissions from the public that disagreed with this were discounted, if mentioned at all. Only submissions agreeing with the government proposal were ever cited. Like the Beijing-approved CE election process, it's a deception Revolution, a distorted Orwellian version of democracy that uses the words, but is really simply authoritarian, says Alan. Mark says the government is again in a no-win situation. It promised the students a report, and that it did. If it did not, it would be accused of not listening to the people. But all is not lost. It does serve as a good reference point and checklist for future inquiries, says Mark. Thanks very much indeed for that. Koki, what about this point? Do you think that Beijing really understands what's going on in Hong Kong? Do you think it understands, let's just say, the diversity of opinion? Do you think it appreciates the diversity of opinion in Hong Kong?
Perhaps they're hearing, but never understanding the situation in Hong Kong. I don't think they didn't know about what's going on, but they are not understanding the sentiment of the people, particularly the younger generation. The central government or the SAR government may be able to win, like this election, to veto any progress. They are the one to veto the progress. It's not us to veto the proposal, because what has been promised by the basic law is we were having a universal suffrage, returning chief executive and all the legislator, has been made the promise in 2017, but they broke the promise. So they are the one to do that. But if you're looking forward for the governance in Hong Kong and perhaps in the future, the younger generation is very against the SAR government, is very against the central government. This never happened before. Even at the worst time, like C.H. Tong, when they are likely to pass Article 23. It's now we are, closer to the so-called reunion in 2047, but the people at the heart is getting away from that. If the central government does not alarm by this, it will only hamper on their governance in Hong Kong, and it put the life difficult not only for us, but perhaps for the central government.
I think there's one thing they're going to hold in their back pocket and try and use it as a sweetener, which is to abolish corporate voting. But it's something that ought to be done independently of this, because that's a local decision. It's not part of the NPC decision. So if they say you can only have this if you approve the NPC decision, then they're basically holding us to ransom, saying we'll only abolish corporate voting if you agree to the new NPC decision.
But even so, I think a lot of people in the public were not concerned about, the corporate vote or the individual vote, because it's still the function of constituency.
Do you mean corporate voting, in the FC or in the nomination committee?
In the FC. And also
the nomination
committee. Yes, they won't care about that. So long it is something we call the small circle, the people in the street will not be concerning difference.
Yeah. Well, Koki, thanks very much indeed for joining us, and David Webb. And we will wait with interest the report, which I think is going to be, second stage of the consultation launched. It's expected this afternoon. Thank you very much indeed. Finally, today,